You're listening to the LA Rams Report's Flipping the Tables podcast.
First and 10 from the 27. Warner back to throw. Rainbow's the far sideline, and it is caught by Isaac Bruce. Makes a move to the 30, 25, 20, and they won't catch him today.
Yes. 73.
Touchdown Rams!
73 yards for the Reverend Ike.
And now, here's your hosts, Josh Webb and Cameron Worrell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new Flipping Tables podcast. As always, I am Josh Webb, and I'm pleased to be joined once again by former NFL safety, ESPN 710 in Fresno, killing time host, Mr. Cam Worrell. Cam, how you doing today, man? Coming off a pretty huge weekend.
Yeah, doing good. Passing down. We were up in the Bay yesterday, so long day, late night, but another great event. You know, saw some talented kids that were just excited to compete. So I'm great. Had a good weekend. Ready to talk some NFL for sure.
Well, before we begin the NFL chatter, I want to take 5 minutes and I want to sort of touch on a subject that popped up over the weekend that I guess you could say it's not entirely NFL related, but it certainly is. And this is the issue of the satellite camp thing. And the NCAA recently decided that they're going to ban satellite camps. And for those who don't know what satellite camps are, the basic concept is that coaches basically go on somewhat, well, we'll just call it a tour. Let's just call it what it is. They go on a tour. And they put on coaching clinics around the country. And it just gives them opportunities to work with kids around the nation, and at the same time, this obviously gives them a chance to look at some of these kids. Sometimes it leads to scholarship offers, other times it just leads to interest or conversations. But the point is now the NCAA has ruled that these traveling camps are a no-go, and that now any camp put on by the school must be within X distance of the actual school itself, and coaches are not allowed to be at other schools. I just toss it over to you, Cam, and ask, what are your thoughts on this? Because it's an extraordinarily controversial topic coming on both sides. Like, on the one hand, I'm all for these camps, totally all for these camps. But I also understand at maybe one or two, I'm not saying it's a reason to end the camps, but being honest, I understand one or two of the issues on the other side. What do we do from here, and what are your thoughts?
I think the satellite camps are great, and it gives, you know, kids in areas that maybe otherwise would not be seen by certain coaches or certain schools the opportunity to get that exposure. And look, I'm probably a little bit biased on this topic because, you know, the whole reason we created Passing Down was to shine a spotlight on kids that don't get the opportunity to be seen by everybody or to be seen all the time. So that's why we created what we do, that 7-on-7 platform. So I think the fact that there were some schools in the NCAA who felt like this was an unfair advantage or it affected them negatively or whatever reasoning they use, I think it's just a bunch of crap. I think these satellite camps are great in that it gets, I mean, Jim Harbaugh was in Fresno last year coaching a camp. Like, that never, ever, ever happens in a city like Fresno where you have a name like Jim Harbaugh coming to teach kids here, to look at kids, to have younger coaches see him work and you know, get an idea of how he runs his practices. Like, it's such a valuable experience for everybody involved that, I mean, number one, taking these camps out, it hurts the kids. And the NCAA is supposed to be all about the kids, and it's supposed to enrich kids' lives, but this doesn't do that. So I think it was a horrible decision. I think a lot of people are negatively affected, and there are a lot of guys who would have had or could have had the opportunity to play big-time college football that might not now. And I just think it's a shame that this came down because there were there were schools unhappy with, you know, Jim Harbaugh getting national attention for going down south or going out west and running camps.
I think what shocked me most is you mentioned Fresno, and I'll be brief about this. I think what shocked me most is that the Mountain West voted in favor of ending them.
Yeah, it's a little surprising.
I was kind of stunned by that.
Especially because, especially schools like, you know, Fresno State or Utah State, like, kids aren't coming to, you know, Logan, Utah, to go to a camp at Utah State for Utah State's coaches to take a look at them. Like, they have to get out. Fresno State has to go down south to get a look at some of these kids. You can go to the IE and look at all these kids that play down there who might not be noticed all the time. Like, it makes total sense for schools to do that. I don't understand why, especially smaller schools, why they would ever limit, you know, the exposure of their programs to kids outside of their areas. Like, if Michigan is going to recruit a kid from Fresno, Michigan is going to recruit a kid from Fresno. But Fresno State going down to San Diego or L.A., they might find some kids that are overlooked, and that could be program-changing kids for them. So it doesn't make any sense to me why that conference would vote in that way, because it just seems like a complete advantage for them.
Yeah, it's like Bob Stoops practically walks into any high school in the Fresno area and gets his pick of the litter of kids. You know, but I would love to see Fresno roll into the major Oklahoma City area and be like, hey, Bob, we're going to take some of your prize guys. Like, yeah, let me know how that works out for you. Get back to me
right.
on that one. You know,
right.
like, so I was kind of stunned by some of the votes. I thought it was a bad decision. I think my biggest thing, and here's where we'll end it before moving on. I think my biggest thing right now with the satellite camps is that everybody is digging in their heels on one side or the other. And while I totally get it, I do not think that we are going to get meaningful discussion out of that. And when you're talking about kids, there are a lot of times where you have to table or set aside maybe some angry feelings that you have and work toward a solution, work toward a common goal with people that you otherwise wouldn't want to, because it's in the best interest of the kid. And I think that the NCAA, the SEC, whomever voted against these satellite camps and those that are for them are on such polar opposite ends of this thing that right now the conversation is more of a shouting match than anything constructive. And I think until the national conversation calms down a little, because I was noticing an article put out by Hugh Freeze, or it wasn't actually put out by Hugh Freeze. It was just comments by Hugh Freeze. He says, I'm selfish. I voted against him because I want to spend more time with my family. And I thought that the reaction on social media was kind of absurd. Like, people were saying, oh, but you got all the time in the world for fundraising. Yeah, he does. That's his job. And I know that recruiting is also his job, but satellite camps are not. Like, they became a part of it, but they're not necessarily part of it. All of these things that coaches and coaches do, they are part of what I think is a college football arms race. And I know Alan Kenny of Blatant Homerism has talked about this ad nauseum. It's not my idea. He's talked about it far more than I ever have. But when you look at that arms race and you look at the discussion of it, it almost becomes political. And if both sides are digging in their heels saying, You're the enemy. You're the enemy. I just feel like this conversation is going to stay at a ban for kids, and it's never going to move beyond that. And I'm far more concerned with getting the kids back in these camps than I am with nitpicking over how people may or may not feel with regard to the extra work they have to do in relation to camps. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you know, I can understand, you know, being a father, someone who doesn't want to add, you know, hours or days to their work schedule. But, you know, that's, I think that's kind of a, that's an excuse for Hugh Freeze to take the stance that he has. Hugh Freeze doesn't need to hold satellite camps. He coaches at Ole Miss. You just go to Ole Miss or bring guys to visit. I think you get the guys that you want. You know, if it was a Mountain West coach who said that, maybe it's a little more believable. They're not making $3 billion.
But I've seen an interesting conversation that spawns up is where it starts isn't so much that Hugh Freeze can just get the kids at Ole Miss. I think we all agree with that. Where Hugh Freeze has a problem is that, let's say he'll be walking around Ole Miss, and then all of a sudden the ADs or the powers that be, the boosters, if you will, start talking about all these camps that Malzahn or some of the other SEC schools are holding. And then it becomes, they're like, well, why aren't we doing that? Why? There's this perception that they're losing ground. And then they start freaking out on coaches saying, well, we need to get a guy in here who's going to hit the road and tour like Nick Saban does. And it's like, guys, that's no. You're missing the point here. That's not what Hugh Freeze is saying. And I do think there's some sincerity, some. I agree with you that it's an excuse. But I do think that until we look at some of the sincere arguments, both in favor for and against, until we look at them and say, okay, how can we remove this as a concern such that it no longer presents itself as a roadblock to getting these kids into camp? I'm all about eliminating the concerns, chopping wood one by one, you know, one game at a time, one issue at a time. Let's get it out of the way, deal with it, so that way the end solution is these kids getting back into camps. Whatever the issues are, let's deal with them one at a time and talk about it. That's my philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to look at it. The problem, I think, is that the SEC doesn't want these camps, and they use the power that they can wield to bring other people on board or to get other people to see things in the same way. So I don't really think there are a lot of legitimate concerns that are holding these camps back. I think it is concerns of a powerful minority is the reason why these don't exist anymore. So I don't really know if there are conversations to have as to the legitimate reasons why these camps should not take place. I just don't think there is. I think it's selfish on everybody's, behalf, at least the ones who voted against it. And the Mountain West and the Sun Belt, I still can't understand why they would vote against
it. Yeah, it came across as a huge shock to me, man.
Right, it just makes no sense at all.
Because, you know, in the past couple of years, we've had Utah State roll through here. We've had Utah. We've had, as you say, Michigan's roll through. Yeah, I mean, there's been some outstanding opportunities. But we digress and move on. This is Rams. Let's get into it. Okay, so the big news out of the Rams is that the big news coming out of Los Angeles and the NFL, for that matter, is the preseason scheduling announcement. Now, why that's big is that, and I know it's a preseason game, but the NFL, I think, did a solid here. And they put a very notable team on the Rams' preseason schedule. The Cowboys are going to come to L.A. for the preseason. First off, before we get into that Cowboys game, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Rams' preseason schedule or the preseason schedule announcements in general. And then second, I wanted to ask you, do you think it is a solid move? I know it's a preseason game, but do you think it's a solid move to put Dallas on the schedule?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Dallas is the most popular team in the NFL. You know, they're America's team for a reason. They're not always good, but they still continue to be that huge draw. So, you know, they're a team that holds their training camp in Southern California as well. There are a lot of Cowboys fans who attend that. So I think it will be a great environment, the first game back as the LA Rams, to play a team like the Cowboys to have, I would imagine a pretty packed Coliseum that day with both Rams and Cowboys fans, but it'll be a great environment. It will be like a regular season environment. And I think that's what the NFL was kind of shooting for when they set up a matchup like this, you know, game one in the preseason. Nobody cares about game one in the preseason, you know, nobody plays. Nobody cares, but this is different because the Rams are coming back. They're playing the Cowboys, and I think it's going to be a very festive atmosphere. It's going to be a game that people are going to pay attention to, not because of what's going on the field, but because of the spectacle, because of the event, because the Rams are back in L.A. and they're playing the Cowboys. So I think it was an excellent move for everybody involved.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of the move. You know, I look at it, and I say, what are the teams that you can put on the Rams schedule that will draw early and immediate interest? And if you're trying to get people fired up for the upcoming season, and then you put the Cowboys in front of them in the first preseason game, I don't really know that you could dangle a bigger chunk of or a bigger carrot in front of the fans than the Cowboys. Like, hey, look, I know this is a preseason game, but the NFL's back, y'all. And you know, get ready for it. This is what's coming this summer, this fall. And I think that, you know, when the fans see that star on the field, even if it's Joe Bob Sklievich at quarterback, the reality is going to sink in. Like we've been saying on this podcast, like once the season's finally here, once you see that star on the field, you'd be like, wow, that, you know, this is real. We're back. Like this isn't a joke. Those are the Cowboys. Those are the Los Angeles Rams, and they're playing. That's a really shrewd move by the NFL, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be an awesome atmosphere, especially for a preseason game. But just the fact that the Rams are back and they're playing a game like that to open it up, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Now, Oxnard set in stone, pretty much, we touched on that last week. They've got the camp OTA situation pretty much set out. And also, they dropped, the Rams did, their season ticket price announcement, which ranging from, what was it, about 360 bones up to about 3,000, which I think were reasonably fair prices overall for tickets at the Los Angeles Coliseum. Though we mentioned that they're likely going to go up once the Shrine in Los Angeles, wherever that damn thing is built. But let's jump into the discussion of the day. Let's get into some of our topics, because we've got plenty of listener questions and topics of discussion for this week. The first thing I want to lead off on is Mr. Dante Whitner. Now, Whitner's been the subject of maybe a bit of controversy. Changing his name was one act that drew a little bit of ire from fans. He's had some ups and downs, but when you look at the impact he could have on the Rams, that with the reports that he's visited Los Angeles, what do you make of this, Cam? Where do you come down on Dante Whitner as an addition to, not St. Louis, Los Angeles?
I've always been a fan of Dante Whitner. I think he has shown throughout his career, I mean, he's a physical safety. He is a guy who probably at this point in his career is a little bit better suited to play closer to the line of scrimmage. But he's also, you know, a very veteran presence. And I'm a fan of bringing veteran players into a secondary when there are not a lot of guys like that. A prime example is the Raiders signing Reggie Nelson to a 2-year deal. I mean, I think that was a tremendous move for the Raiders to bring in an experienced guy that can be that leader in the secondary. You need a voice. You need a guy to kind of set the tone every day. It's tough when you have even, you know, very, very talented young guys. It's tough to get them working every day with a certain mentality, and a guy like Dante Whitner is a guy who can come in and bring that. You have some extremely talented guys in the secondary, some guys who have played a lot of football. TJ McDonald's played a lot of football for a young guy. You know, Tremaine Johnson, same thing. But Dante Whitner is a guy that can come in and be that immediate leader and voice and veteran presence. And I think, you know, he might be on the downside. I mean, he's 30 years old. He's not going to be a Pro Bowl safety, I don't think, anymore like he was with the 49ers. But he's still a solid safety who can fit a couple of different positions in that secondary, and a guy who just adds depth and maturity to a position that really needs him.
Well, you mentioned one thing in there that I thought was interesting. You say, you know, at this point in his career, he's probably better suited to play closer to the line of scrimmage. Well, the problem with the safety position for the Rams is that they lost the guy who you stressed is a cover safety.
Yeah.
So How does Whitner, does Whitner more address the loss of a guy like James Laurinaitis than maybe Rodney McLeod, because he's going to maybe be that run-stuffing safety playing closer to the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, he definitely doesn't replace Rodney McLeod. There are a few people right now in the NFL, I think, that can come in and just fill that void. What I think you're doing when you bring in a guy like Dante Whitner is, you know, it's kind of a conversation we've had in regards to the Rams draft plans. Sometimes you just bring in good players and you figure out where they fit after the fact. You know, you just bring in a guy who you know can play, can be a leader, can do other things than, hey, he fits this specific role or need on our defense. You know, I think bringing in solid football players, solid veteran leaders, it's always good for an organization, you know, kind of regardless where they're going to fit in your system. Now, obviously, he's going to have to play somewhere, and, you know, he's not the Rodney McLeod type of safety that I hope that the Rams find a way to bring in, whether it's through the draft or another veteran guy. But, you know, Dante Whitner is still a good athlete, can still play man coverage on tight end, can still be versatile in a secondary, can still come and bring pressure as a safety. So you find a place for this guy. Does he fit a specific need on this defense? I don't think so. But like I said, when you can bring someone like this in who has played at a very high level throughout his career, I think you kick the tires on a guy like that. You know, whether he ends up signing with the Rams or not, it's kind of, you know, to be determined, but I definitely think that you do your due diligence and meeting this guy, thinking about where he can fit inside your defense, where he will fit inside your locker room, and seeing if it's a fit as an organization to bring him in, you know, on a 1 or 2 year deal or something like that.
And you look at a guy like Whitner, and you'd probably assume that a 1 or 2 year deal would be about the max that any team would offer him at this point in time. When you look at maybe where the Rams are situated, because right now, I mean, the Browns had to let Whitner hit free agency, and when it finally did, now there's going to be some teams in command of his services or in search of his services, but where do the Rams slot as maybe, if you're Dante Whitner looking at situational fit, saying, okay, I know I'm probably going to have interest from this team, that team, the other team. Why do you choose Los Angeles over maybe some of the other potential fits out there?
I mean, L.A. is L.A., first of all. I think we have to at least start, you know, in recognizing that L.A. is different. And that, you know, Dante Whitner's career, my career, you know, a lot of players' careers, there has never been a team in L.A., and I think that's attractive to a lot of people. You know, T.J. McDonald is in that secondary as a safety, but really there is not a lot of experience, hardly any experience at all in the back end of that secondary. So, you know, T.J. McDonald can play multiple roles. If the Rams can find a place for Dante Whitner to fit, you know, Dante Whitner can come in. I would imagine, you know, he'll get a little bit of money to sign. He'll have an incentive-laden deal with, you know, a decent base salary. But I think he sees the Rams as a potential opportunity to come in, to start, to be productive, and make a lot of money as, you know, a 30-year-old safety. I think it's attractive to him in that regard, because there are not a lot of opportunities for a 30-year-old safety who just got released from the Browns to come in and walk into the door as a starter day one. So I guess that would be very attractive to him. Not to mention he's playing in L.A. He's back in the NFC West, where he played really, really well for the 49ers, and he knows these teams in the division very well. Like, it would be a pretty smooth transition for him. I'm sure he's going to take more trips. I'm sure there's going to be some interest for his services, because I think there's a premium for a guy who has his experience and still plays at the level that he does. The LA Rams are attractive to him because he can come in and he can probably start right away. And you know, you get to be in LA, you get to utilize the LA market for, you know, whatever a 30-year-old safety is going to do in his next career, which is probably pretty short for him. It would be a nice place to try to pick up that second career, whatever he feels like he's going to do.
Yeah, and I would add to that that you just look at the available opportunities for a guy like Whitner. In addition to being able to come in and start right away, Los Angeles, as you mentioned, is sort of in need of a bunch of leaders. And at 30, I can say from personal experience, you're not really trying to reinvent the wheel later on in life. You're trying to find what's worked for you and continue on that career path. And you look at the NFC West, he's not going to have to learn a new division. He's not going to have to learn new teams, a new scheme. I mean, he will, but for the most part, you know what you're getting yourself into. Whitner will have seen the Rams more than enough times in the Fisher era, and his football IQ is such that he'll know exactly what he's getting himself into. And there is something to be said for that. It's a creature comfort thing once you start getting older and into, I don't want to say the twilight of your career, but into the portion of the career where you can call your own shots as much as you ever can. There's something to be said for just assuming that locker room leader role and just sort of easing into things and taking over. So that may appeal to Whitner, I may imagine, though I don't know because I don't know Whitner. But I do know one thing. I do know that we have spent a million hours talking about the Rams quarterback situation, and I know that we're going to spend about a million more. Reports now beginning to surface that the Broncos, after failed negotiations with Kaepernick, may look potentially, though I don't know how true this is, at a guy like Nick Foles. So I can't imagine why you'd think going from Peyton Manning to Nick Foles would solve your problems. That's a discussion that's out there. What I'm going to put to you is, do you think Foles will even be around as a Ram when the season starts?
Oh, man, I guess that depends on, what goes on at the end of April in the NFL draft. I think it's been pretty clear with what we've heard in the offseason that, the Rams are going to move forward with Case Keenum as the guy they think, can be their starter this year. At least that's what they say right now, which doesn't mean a lot right now. But, Sean Mannion, the dude they drafted last year, is probably not going anywhere as a third rounder that they invested in last year. So if the Rams draft a quarterback, if Case Keenum's your starter, Sean Mannion's, your third rounder from last year, Nick Foles looks like he might be the odd man out in that conversation. We've talked about Cardale Jones on this podcast. We've talked about Paxton Lynch on this podcast. We've thrown some quarterback names out there of guys that we think are possible targets for the Rams in the upcoming draft, and it wouldn't surprise me if they pull the trigger on one of those guys that Nick Foles is a guy that we see elsewhere. If not, I see Nick Foles being here, being around for training camp. I don't know if Sean Mannion is a guy that you feel comfortable being your backup quarterback right now, and that would be the case more than likely if you draft a guy, unless you draft obviously a guy in the first round that you feel like can compete as a starter right away. A lot to be determined now until the draft, but if there are three quarterbacks on this roster with Nick Foles as that odd man out, I can see him not being around when training camp comes around.
I also want to look at the draft, and you look at how many picks the Rams have, and you say, okay, we are a relatively young team. We know we need to get a little bit better. There is some talent in this draft, and we feel like we through evaluations, can get some solid quality, some value later on in the draft. Do you look at unloading Foles just for that reason alone? I mean, he's going to be worth something. I want to say he's going to have some inherent value just because of, he was a one-time Pro Bowler. I think that people kind of view him as what he is right now, and that may be a project. It may be a starter. I don't know. It really honestly depends on the NFL GM. But I have to think that this guy, depending on how you package it, is worth maybe one or two picks. I mean, if you know, package it as like a third and a sixth or something, I don't. However you want to work this out, there, I feel like the Rams could use him to get something in return for the upcoming draft. Is that a possibility? And if so, give me your best and worst case scenario of trade value.
You know, man, I don't know. I mean, a couple of years ago, Nick Foles' trade value was very high. It would make sense if, you know, like I said, you really think Case Keenum can be your guy and Sean Manning is going to be your backup. If you can get some value for Nick Foles, that would make sense. It would make sense to get some value because, you know, as you said, this is a team that needs talent at a lot of different positions. I don't know what the ceiling for Nick Foles, you know, what his trade value is. You know, people need quarterbacks. Nick Foles has done it at a high level in the NFL in his career. But, I can't imagine a team giving up a fourth-round pick for Nick Foles. I think that would probably be the ceiling, a fourth-round pick for a guy like that. I mean, this is a guy who right now it appears is has lost a competition to Case Keenum as a starting quarterback for the Rams. So I would imagine a fourth is about the most you will be able to get for him, all the way down to maybe a sixth-round draft pick. I think that's, you know, he's still cheap. He has done it. If you really are uncomfortable with your quarterback, you know, position in the offseason, like maybe the Jets, you could bring in a cheap veteran guy like Foles. So if you do have to play with him, you know, you feel like you have a chance at least with the roster you have built around him. But I don't see how he has more value than, you know, a fourth to sixth rounder. And I would say fourth is probably about the ceiling I would see is the absolute highest you would get for somebody like him.
If I'm an NFL owner or a GM, I'm looking at Foles through a different prism, and I'm looking at him as a guy that if my starter goes down, like if I'm the Steelers, I look at a guy like Nick Foles and say, okay, this might be a valid option because I know that my quarterback is going to miss 2-3 games a season. It's just going to happen. The way he plays, my guy is going to go down. But in a competitive division, depending on the timing of the injury, it can be everything or nothing. And if you have a guy like Foles in place to step in, you can push it more towards the nothing side than the everything side. Because you don't want to be caught in a situation where you look at the Arizona Cardinals. Let's stick within the division. And you look at the Cardinals. When Kurt Warner goes down, that team turns into one of the most inept offenses. Like, I mean, they're more inept than the Rams with an actual starter. And that says a lot when Kurt Warner's out. So if I'm a team like the Cardinals, I'm looking at a guy like Foles saying, okay, when Carson Palmer inevitably injures something this season, Foles can come in, maybe get us, you know, if he's down for, say, 3 games, we can get, you know, a 2-1 or 1-2 out of that. Maybe 1-1-1, who knows. And you mitigate the problems that you have by virtue of losing your starter and having to rely on somebody being John Skelton. Because as you've said, Nick Foles has done it at a high level. Whether or not he's capable of ever tapping into that again on a consistent basis, for me, is not the discussion. The discussion is he better than most backups out there? And I would actually say yes. I would feel more comfortable with Nick Foles as my backup because he is not prone to turnovers. If anything, he'll take the damn sack because he's too scared to get rid of the ball. But I'd rather that out of my backup than a guy out there throwing four different interceptions and turning the ball over.
Yeah, I think there's value for Nick Foles as a backup quarterback, but I don't think you get more than a fourth round pick for Nick Foles. But yeah, I think you bring up some very good points. Is a guy who you kind of know what you're getting with him. You want your backup quarterback to be a guy that you can put in different situations and feel confident that he'll be able to handle those situations. And I think Nick Foles can, I think he is that guy.
I hate calling a guy a backup, you know what I mean? Because there's nothing, I feel like it's a slight. But if you're Nick Foles, that's an ideal situation for you because it gives you a chance to prove yourself. Look, you're likely not going to get a starting gig. You've fallen out of the public limelight enough that people are going to consider you a reclamation project at best. But what you can hope for is that a team like the Cardinals, a team like the Steelers, a team that have these aging quarterbacks who may not be able to make it through an NFL season, you can rely on this guy to comfortably get you through a stretch of games. And I'm not saying that's worth more than a fourth-round pick, but if I am an NFL GM, that's the way I view Foles. I don't view him as a guy who can come into my starting roster and jump in there and he's going to be the answer for 2016. I think you almost set yourself up for failure no matter what you trade him for, what the value is in return. If you enter into 2016 with the mindset that Nick Foles is going to be the answer, I think you're asking the wrong question. But if you come in there saying Nick Foles can be an answer in the event of, I think that's when you're truly using Foles to his strengths right now, and you're positioning yourself for a better end result than saying this guy's our starter. That's my evaluation, my GM hat of Foles at this stage in his career. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I think that's more than fair. He's really only had success under Chip Kelly. And when you've had success in only one system and only one way of doing things, I think you have to evaluate a guy like that. You have to say he has a lower ceiling in other systems than maybe he did, you know, when he was in Philadelphia playing for Chip Kelly. So I think that's fair. You know, being a backup quarterback in the NFL, I don't think it's a slight at all. I mean, there are very few capable individuals in the world that can play that position. And, you know, if you're one of 60 or so that can do it, I don't think at all that is a slight. It just means, hey, you're
if I were a quarterback and somebody said, use the term game manager, career backup, or I don't know, I'd have to hear deceptively athletic would be another one that I'd be like, damn it, man. Like, I hate those terms. I feel like I'm tossing a slight. It may not be a slight, but if you're Nick Foles, do you want to be called a guy that's best suited for a backup role? That's kind of, I think that's more what I meant by it feels like a slight. Because I feel like Nick Foles himself has to think, I was in the Pro Bowl, man. I had an NFL season with two interceptions. I can do this. Like, if you're Nick Foles, that's what you're telling yourself. I think. I hope.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I was a career backup safety. I still thought I was, you know, had the potential to be a starter. You know, I started for one season in Miami and felt like, hey, I proved I could be a starter, but on the grand scale, you know, other people don't always view you that way. I don't necessarily think that's a slight. Now, this is Nick Foles thinks of himself as a starter, no question. And if someone were to say, hey, how does it feel to be a career backup or to be, you know, someone we think can be a good game manager if our starter gets hurt? That's not attractive to Nick Foles, but that's who he is at this point in his career. I think it's fair to call him that. I don't necessarily think that it's a slight, like you're saying. It's not what he wants to hear, for sure. You know, and I've been a part of those conversations, and it's not at all what you want to hear because you think of yourself in different terms, but that's just kind of the reality of where he is. And, you know, you get paid very well for being a backup quarterback in the NFL, and you can play a long time without taking a lot of, beatdowns like, you know, every other player on that roster does. So not such a bad spot to be, but no, it's I'm sure not what Nick Foles thinks of himself.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you across the board on that. I mean, if you're Nick Foles, you probably look at yourself as a guy who can do it. But as you said, I do think that as you spend more time around the league, there is a bit of the storm weathers you in some way. You have to weather the storm, but the storm is eventually also going to weather you, and it's going to chip away, and a new man is going to emerge, a man who understands the business, who understands how to get ahead in the business, and that's what smart NFL players do. The guys that have prolonged careers, you know, I mean, obviously there are studs, but there are guys who have prolonged careers because they learned how to play the game. You accept the season or two where maybe somebody views you as a backup, and then you prove yourself, because that's what this league is. It's constantly proving yourself at the highest possible level, and there's going to be years when, frankly, maybe somebody else is higher on them. But if you keep doing you, and you keep doing what you know how to do, this is what we tell kids in recruiting. This is what we tell kids in college. You just got to stay the course and weather the storm. And I think that that's where Nick Foles is at. We'll see what ends up happening. But I want to cap this question by putting a percentage on what you think Foles – the percentage that you think Foles will be in L.A. next season. What would you put that at in favor of?
I would put Nick Foles being in L.A. at 35%.
That's fair.
Much more likely that he will not be there than he will be there, because I do think the Rams are going to draft a quarterback in the draft. I don't think it's going to be in the first round, but I do think they're going to draft a quarterback that they feel they can groom and develop into being a starter. If that's the case, I don't see Nick Foles sticking around, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's, you know, if he's a draft day trade, if he's gone on draft day, and like you said, the Rams are able to pick up a pick or two, or get some value for him on draft day. That would make a lot of sense if that happens.
Now, we've talked a lot about what the Rams need in free agency, but before we get into Scout's NFL mock draft that I did, what I want to talk about is what maybe you think should be addressed in free agency positionally versus what you think should be addressed in the draft. And so by that, I mean, if you were GM Cam and they came to you and said, all right, we're looking at the roster. We've got these holes we need to fill. If you were going through and saying, that's a draft need, that's a free agent need, how would you go about this roster? And I know that things can change, but with your experience in the league and what you know guys tend to produce coming out of the draft versus maybe what the average fan, because you look at these guys coming out of the draft and fans look at guys like Laquon Treadwell and they think, okay, he's just going to step right in and he's going to be a stud. Sure, that may be true, but there, you know, that doesn't account for his sophomore slump. That doesn't account for the learning curve of when NFL teams start doubling him. It doesn't account for any of that. We tend to think about things in the short term. And you know, having been there, that there's far more to it than that. Guys have to develop at a different rate, and that football IQ definitely comes into play. So for you, I imagine that saying that's a free agent void or that's a draft void is going to come with different meaning. So I just kind of want to go through positionally and ask you what you think and get just a real short opinion. And we'll start on the offensive side, and we'll just say, offensive line, is that a draft need or is that a free agency need? Or, you know, you can push if you'd like, if it's something that can be both.
I think offensive line is a draft need. I think you have, over the last couple of seasons, you've invested a lot of draft picks in guys that you want to develop within your system. there could be the possibility of maybe a veteran center that comes in to add depth, but I think you're talking about the offensive line being a draft position. I don't think there's an immediate need right now for a guy to come in and be a starter. Otherwise, I think we would have seen the Rams make a push for that earlier in free agency. So I think when you're talking about the offensive line, I think you draft an interior guy to compete and to develop. So I think it's more a draft need than a free agency need as far as the offensive line goes.
And now this is a position you've talked about quite a bit, especially with Jared Cook's departure. But tight end, draft need, free agency need?
I think both. I think you need a young tight end who can fill a Jared Cook type of a role, but you also need somebody who can fit kind of the system. And we've had a few conversations about tight end in this draft, but, you know, when you play kind of the style that Jeff Fisher likes to play, it's kind of imperative that you are a complete tight end. But I think they need a guy with a certain physical skill set that can be a vertical threat, that can work the seam in this offense, and I don't think there are guys you can find in free agency that can fit that void right now. I think you need a guy to come in and add some depth to that position as far as a veteran guy goes, but I think you need to invest in a young tight end that you feel can really, like, you need a vertical presence on this offense. You need a guy that can do that in the middle of the field. That's why I think you really need to find a tight end in this draft that can fill that specific need.
And when you look at the receiver position, and now how you want to break this up is up to you, because I understand that having your primary guy is going to be a bit different from what you ask of your slot guy. So how you want to answer this is up to you, but wide receiver, and I think we've covered this when we talked about the available wide receivers, and it was at the time just like Alshon Jeffrey coming good.
Right.
So I think I know the answer to this one, but draft need or free agency need?
Yeah, I think it's the number one draft need for the Rams. I think you have to find that receiver that can make defenses nervous, that can make defenses change their game plan, you know, that can pose a threat every snap. To a defense, the Rams don't have that guy right now, and until you have that guy, I think it's very difficult to build a legitimate passing offense, regardless of who your quarterback is. You don't have that guy, it's very difficult to have a consistent element to your offense in the pass game. So number one draft need is wide receiver.
And then moving on to the guy who's got to deliver the ball to the wide receiver, is the quarterback something that you would have addressed through free agency prior to maybe where some of these pieces went, or is it something that you would have focused on through the draft?
I mean, that's tough because, you know, I think our Nick Foles conversation probably covers kind of what is available as a free agent quarterback in the NFL. You know, it's very rare that, you know, I know Brock Osweiler was one this year, but, I mean, Brock Osweiler is still very unproven. He had some success in Denver, but, you know, he's only started 7 games in his career, and he gets, you know, $70 million. So I think with what is out there, when you're talking about veteran quarterbacks, it's very tough to bring a guy in that you feel can make a real impact. You know, we've had a lot of conversations on this podcast about quarterback in the draft. And, you know, I think in the first couple rounds, the Rams draft a quarterback, and I think they need a guy that they still can. Sean Mannion's not that guy. I don't think he is. Case Keenum might be serviceable, but I think the Rams need to find a guy they feel can develop into a franchise quarterback, and that has to be done in the first couple rounds. So, you know, I think quarterback is another big need for this team. Now, you know, you brought up a very good point about kind of the lack of urgency of this, you know, organization with Jeff Fisher and Les Snead at the helm to bring in a quarterback that you know, is a guy that can make plays to win as opposed to a guy that maybe just gets pieces around him to be successful. So we'll see if they take that approach, but, you know, I think you have to find a guy that you feel can be your franchise guy in this draft.
And finally, on offense, because I think fullback is basically a voided position at this particular point, where do you come down on running back? I mean, there is Todd Gurley, so you can make the argument that the Rams don't necessarily need him. Although there are some issues with the second string guys, particularly the off the field issues. Do you go in and draft a running back late? Do you look at maybe the free agent market? Do you leave this one alone? Like, how do you come down on the running back situation? Because Gurley's a talent, but Gurley got injured, and running backs are only one play away from being down for the year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it'd be great to draft, you know, all these positional needs. But, you know, when we're talking about a hierarchy of needs, I think running backs are a little bit lower on that list. I know that his backups have some red flags, but, you know, yeah, Todd Gurley had the ACL at Georgia. He got banged up last year, but he's clearly one of the more talented running backs that is in the NFL. And I think you have to address that position in that way, that you have your guy. You would like to fill in some pieces behind him that can come in if necessary, like Trey Mason or Benny Cunningham. So I think if you make a move at that position, you know, you may find a free agent who can, if you need some depth, come in and help be that guy. But I don't think with Todd Gurley being your first rounder last year that you need to invest another draft pick in a running back this year.
And I want to leave the defense for next time because, you know, that's just the thing to do. We can get through one portion of this at a time because I want to go through the first three picks of Scout's NFL mock draft. I've been working on this off to the side with a lot of the Scout pubs, and I want to go through the picks that I took. The first round was a bit crazy. Once guys started flying off the board at certain positions, it sort of just trickled down from there. To give you an idea of what I was facing, Laquon Treadwell actually went at number 11. So I took Eli Apple, and I know we talked a little bit about this last week, but I wanted to fill out the remainder of the we're in the third round, right? That's how slow this damn thing is moving. We're actually in the third round right now going through. Kenneth Dixon was just taken by the Cowboys. But with my second round picks, and I don't know that I necessarily needed to do this, but with the 46th overall pick, I took Will Fuller because he was still on the board at that point. And every single whiteout, you name it, like position of need, like there was – Wentz, Lynch, and Goff were already off the board by this time. So you actually, I take that back. I don't think Wentz was off the board. I think we left Lynch. Lynch went 28th to the Chiefs. But I just didn't feel that Lynch was a number 15 guy for the Rams. So I passed on him in the first round, and then he wasn't available in the second round. But Will Fuller was. And then two picks later, I bolstered that option with Braxton Miller. Did I botch the second round by drafting two wide receivers, or are the Rams in such a place that I hedged my bets?
I love Will Fuller in the second round. I mean, if you get Will Fuller in the second round in this draft and you get Eli Apple, who can fill a couple of different, you know, roles in the secondary, I think you hit two home runs. Now, Braxton Miller, I mean, we've had a lot of conversations about him. He's a very intriguing prospect. He's a guy who, you know, I think we both feel can develop into a very good wide receiver. He has all the physical skill sets that you need to be that guy. He's just a little bit raw at the position. But, I mean, you can't be mad if you get Eli Apple, Will Fuller, and Braxton Miller with your first three picks. Could you have gone maybe more need with that, you know, second-round pick? Sure, but, you know, if you're...
My issue was your guy, this is what I was honestly going to do with the second pick, is I was going to address that safety need. But this is no joke. The Raiders took Darian Thompson right after I took Will Fuller. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. It's like they knew who I wanted to take. And so every time it got to a pick where I was like, ooh, we can sneak in this position, the other pubs were all about it. So really once I hit that second pick, I felt like, okay, I don't know that there's a ton of value. You could reach for a safety here, or you could hedge your bets with a wide receiver that's still on the board that I feel like, if nothing else, you have a surefire guy in Will Fuller, and then you have an athlete in Braxton Miller. What you do with him is up to you, but he represented for me the best available value at that point. Though I will concede two wide receivers is probably unneeded.
Yeah, but when you add two weapons like that, you know, you find places for those guys to be. And we could definitely nitpick and talk about some other positions that could be filled, but if you're a Rams fan and that's how your first three picks go, I think you're very happy with that. I think you're excited with that. I think there are a lot of things you can do with those guys. We both think Will Fuller is a number one receiver. And I know the Rams have Tavon Austin, who's a very versatile playmaker, but I think Braxton Miller can develop into a really, really good NFL receiver. And if you have those weapons immediately on your offense, now that quarterback conversation, it's not as pertinent because you have weapons that can go along with Todd Gurley and can make a job easier on a quarterback. And you know, as you said many times, that's kind of how the Rams approach their quarterback spot. So, you know, I think you'd be very happy if those are your first three draft picks.
I would also add that if in the event you decide to package up and trade Braxton Miller, there's serious value there, and you can probably get a couple of picks in return for a guy like Miller, maybe in a three-way trade, some late-round value. I don't know, man. It's a dang mock draft. I'm sure that by the time it's done, I'm going to have a roster that looks absolutely nothing like what the Rams have. But it's certainly fun to fill out. And as we get further and further down the draft, I'm really testing some of the conversations we've had, because I'm telling you, every time I go to make a pick off of one of the guys we've discussed, it's like the team before me takes them. Because it's like, all right, well, now what? But before we wrap up, let's get into some listener questions, because Lord knows we have enough that it'll take a minute to get through. So let's get through some of these things, and then we'll call it a day. Our first listener question comes from, I actually don't know, they didn't put their name on it, but any thoughts on the season ticket pricing at the Coliseum, and was it the right move by the Rams?
I think so. We spoke about this last time when the prices came out. It seems affordable to me. I know it is the Coliseum. It's a little dated, but you know, your highest season ticket is $2,000. I think that's fairly reasonable for an NFL season ticket. So I think it was a move well done by the Rams.
It's $700 just to get in the door to Kobe's last game in Los Angeles. If you can get an NFL season ticket for $2,000, man, just call it a day and walk away.
And the best, the best seats, right? The best seats for $2,000. So
right,
you know,
yeah.
You get
something
for as little as $300. So I think it was the right move by the Rams.
Yeah.
Well done.
That same $700 is going to get you a pair of binoculars to look at Kobe wave. Like it's going to be,
right,
you're going to basically be playing Where's Waldo in the Staples Center. So Corey McCarthy wants to know, if the Rams go 7-9 or 8-8 like normal, how different will the media in LA act, and will it put more pressure on the front office to fire Jeff Fisher?
I think there's there's obviously or at least there should be a greater sense of urgency because you're now playing in L.A. as opposed to being in St. Louis, so the attention you're going to get, the scrutiny you're going to get is going to be much higher. But, you know, I think, and this is something we've touched on a few times in the podcast, Jeff Fisher and Les Snead seem to be pretty safe. They seem to be on the cusp of some extension, so I think that there might be more scrutiny, there might be more attention on, you know, an average NFL team, but I don't necessarily think that that's going to affect Les Snead or Jeff Fisher. I think they're going to sign that extension and they're going to have an opportunity to build something in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm going to keep referring back to the conversations we had with our guys from Chirp Show Times about Arsenal. You look at Arsenal right now, and there are no this is in London, mind you, okay? This is in London. And Arsenal, I can promise you, has fans that are far more pissed off and ready to do something than the crop of fans that will just be starting to show up. And I'm not saying that there aren't long-time Los Angeles fans, but this move is going to attract a whole new slew of fans that are now in support of an LA franchise. And so for a lot of them, they're not going to have sat through those 7-9 seasons that a lot of longtime Rams fans have sort of been dealing with. And I think that the media also is going to have, I actually don't know. I say this, and as I'm saying it, I'm not 100% confident about it, but I think there will be a grace period simply because there's a move involved. It's NFL back in Los Angeles. There's obvious need for the Rams to address some things. And I just don't know that the temperament's going to be there for the immediately turn on the NFL after they've made their long-awaited move back to Los Angeles, especially when Stan Kroenke, and this is the key thing for me, Stan Kroenke's funding the move. If you're funding your own move, I think that gives you time. It's your damn business. If you're funding your own move, you can buy yourself a little bit of leeway. So I don't think that there will be – I do think the media will flip on the Rams, but I don't think at the end of the day it'll matter to Kroenke. Like, he ain't going to fire Fisher unless Kroenke wants to fire Fisher. And I think that that's where this conversation ends, in the sense of, If that's what the hope is, if that's what, you know, fans are wondering, like, does futility eventually lead to Fisher's ouster? I think the answer is no. No. You know, as long as the Rams are winning 8 games, 7 games, then Fisher will remain around. But, you know, if they keep winning 2 or 3, then yeah, sure, I think Kroenke may eventually have to do something. But, no, I think the sustained plan for success is really where the Rams are at.
Yeah, I agree with you. Unless it's a dumpster fire in L.A., you know, I think the leadership within this organization, they're going to have a chance to build L.A. in the way that they see fit.
Yep. Now we get into what I think is something maybe we've talked about a little, so we can be brief on it. But Sam Ramirez wants to know, was tagging Tremaine Johnson and letting Janoris Jenkins walk the right move for L.A.?
I think it totally was the right move. I'm a big fan of Tremaine Johnson. I think the type of guaranteed money that Janoris Jenkins got, with how risky of a player he is, it just didn't make sense to me at all. I think the Giants are going to regret that contract a couple years in. And hopefully the Rams can work out a long-term deal with Tremaine Johnson, because I think he can be a staple in that secondary for a long time.
And similarly, Mr. Ramirez also wants to know, is how effective can Ogletree and Quinn be after their season-ending injuries?
I think they'll be just fine. The big question with Alec Ogletree is how that transition to the middle is going to go for him. I think it's a much bigger question than how he can recover from you know, a season-ending injury. Like, I think Robert Quinn's going to be back to the guy we've seen in the past. And Alec Ogletree's effectiveness is going to really largely be determined by how he transitions into the middle of that defense.
Yeah, I would argue Robert Quinn's problems weren't as much injuries as they were being completely misused. Like, it did.
Yeah.
I would just, that's what I would argue. I would actually even be willing to listen to an argument that he got injured because he was misused.
That'd be a fun conversation.
It would be. What do you make of the Rams being signed up to play 3 more international games? And let's spend a minute on this one, because I think this is an interesting subject. Where do you come down on international NFL games?
I played in the first ever game in London, the Dolphins and the Giants, and it was, for me, it was one of the greatest experiences I had as an NFL player. Not everybody feels that way, but, we were in London playing football. There were 90,000 fans in Wembley Stadium, going ape over. They didn't even know who. They just enjoyed the atmosphere. It was one of the best atmospheres for a football game that I've ever been a part of. So I think it's great. I love the international series. I wish the NFL would put more of a spotlight on the games that are actually played there so people can kind of understand the environment that it's played in. If you're coming to L.A., you're obviously in one of the biggest markets in the entire world, but, playing games internationally can only strengthen the brand of the Rams, especially when everybody who, are international football fans, they know where L.A. is, they know what L.A. is, and I think it makes it easier to pick up international fans when you play in a city like L.A., that fans can immediately recognize and at least have an awareness that it exists instead of, like Jacksonville or...
But I'm curious about that because I want to go the other way on this. How many flipping fans in the actual United States could actually point out where Manchester is on a map of England? Like, how many people could actually point out where Manchester is? I am guessing, and I'm being generous here, but, maybe 30%. So, while I understand the notion that they know that they're from L.A., I'm not – I've had curious conversations with people across the pond who absorb football. They're soccer fans, but they absorb American football when it comes there. And they try and pick my brain because it ain't their sport, and they know that I understand it. It's not even so much the geographics that interest them, because I think that in England, fans are so used to teams being huge from small sections of the countryside, if that makes sense. You've got Liverpool, and Liverpool is not, Merseyside is not, it's basically a shipping port. It's an old shipping port. It's the dam equivalent of, the Long Beach Harbor. And it's not a big place, but if you mention Liverpool, everybody knows who Liverpool is, just simply because of the name value of it. But it comes from this really small place in England. So I'm curious as to how much of the attraction is simply based off it's the NFL. I imagine that, because if you look at the games that are coming here this summer, on the flip side, soccer games are going to be played in the Rose Bowl in Michigan's Big House. They've set up a huge tournament coming through. And I'm wondering how many people show up on the opposite end just because you're like, oh, it's Chelsea versus Milan. I know who those two teams are just by name. I'm going to go and watch them. I don't care that Chelsea's from London.
I think if the Dallas Cowboys played the Pittsburgh Steelers, anywhere internationally, obviously people are going to know who they are. They're going to go watch those games because those are names that everybody recognizes. And, Liverpool, I don't know a lot about, the English Premier League or English soccer. I recognize Manchester United. I recognize Liverpool and Chelsea. I recognize those names.
But the name equivalent would sort of be who would they be? It would be the Jacksonville. That's the irony of this situation, is that for England, Merseyside, Jacksonville, I think, is a bigger place than Merseyside. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I actually think Jacksonville is like a larger metropolitan area. So I'm curious, like, if the fact that, like, the Jags went there means a damn thing versus, oh, it's the NFL here. You know what I'm saying? Like, does the fact that they're from L.A. drive the fans there?
I think it will, and I think this is why. I understand exactly the point you're bringing up, and I think it's pretty fair. When I was with the Dolphins and we played the Giants, there were not a lot of Dolphins or Giants fans in the stadium. There were just fans of American football in the stadium. And they rooted for, you know, whoever they wanted to root for, but there wasn't a partisan, you know, crowd. It was, you know, it was widespread, the amount of fans for each team that were there. But I think, you know, when you're talking about premier soccer teams, like, just casual fans in the United States recognize those names. Fans across, you know, the sea, they recognize the Cowboys and the Steelers and the 49ers, and I think they would be attracted to those teams. But L.A. is recognizable. Like, Jacksonville is not recognizable. The Chicago Bears would be recognizable, like, either city names or teams that, you know, have had success that fans would know. I think that's just a little bit more attractive. So when you're talking about, oh, a team from L.A., or, oh, there's a team from New York, I know where New York is. I might not necessarily know the New York Jets like I know the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I think there's an attractiveness because you know, hey, this team does come from a huge city in the United States. They're not a power, but sure. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are English Premier League teams that come from, you know, larger cities that I would recognize, but I have no idea what their soccer club is, and I might recognize them just because of that, as opposed to another team, you know, that has been very, very successful. That isn't like the Chelsea or the Manchester United or Liverpool kind of teams that everybody knows. I think just that name recognition immediately would, or city recognition immediately would draw some interest just because of that. But yeah, I guess in a long-winded way, you're right. The NFL is what's attractive for those fans over there. And outside of a very select few organizations, I think it's pretty much we're fans of American football, so we're going to watch whatever game is played. For the Rams, though, I do think L.A. does add a little bit to their international brand in that they do play in L.A. and can help them build, I think, a stronger brand than, say, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who just go because, hey, there's some American football, so come watch it.
Yeah, and you know, I'll play devil's advocate against my own argument and say that last year when Barca and Man United played at Levi's Stadium, I don't think anybody on earth came. Yeah, but this is at the exact same time that Copa America's going on. Lionel Messi's not even there. Nobody gave a damn. Nobody gave one damn. That stadium was packed. It was sold out. You couldn't get a ticket. It was Barca versus Man United. It was a flipping preseason game, but people showed up in spades. It was an opportunity to see two names that you knew. You knew, you knew, you knew. You may not have known who was going to play for him, but you know the name Barca. You know the name Man United. It sold. And I think that, to your point, Los Angeles will sell on the international market. And in as much as soccer is coming here and being played in our biggest stadiums, I think it is fantastic that our product is catching on over there and being played in some of their biggest stadiums. I hope the relationship continues, because I'm loving the Premier League over here in the United States, and I'm sure that fans across the pond are digging on the NFL over there. So, all good things, man. It's all good things. But this I thought was interesting, and we can kind of just touch on it because we've gone long, and I think we already did mention it. But Mr. McCarthy, Corey McCarthy, wants to know, will the Rams address the offensive line in the upcoming draft? Well, Corey, I think we answered that question. But do you just want to recap that one?
I think if they do, it's going to be late. It's going to be, a guy like, who has a high ceiling, who can come in and, you know, be a project. I don't think they're going to invest a high draft pick on anybody for that offensive line this season.
And let's get back to the international conversation. Like, I feel like it's where we're at. So, I am going to do my best, having grown up speaking Dutch and German, to not bastardize this name. But I am sure that, you know, somebody can come in and tell me that I've mispronounced it, and that's totally fine. But somebody wants to know, could we see the Rams taking a chance on Moritz Behringer, the receiver out of Germany, in the later rounds? Now, the Giants obviously took a flyer on a French guy this past offseason. I believe they signed him. I can't remember the name. I'm sure I'll know it fully by the time the season starts. But the international scene seems to be something that a lot of people are looking at. How much do you even know about Mr. Behringer? Do you see the Rams taking a chance on an international receiver?
I think, you know, I know very little about this guy. I did see some numbers or a YouTube video, you know, about a 6'4 guy who ran, you know, 4'4, who just dominated whatever competition he was playing out in Germany. But I think he's an intriguing prospect for any NFL team. Whether he's going to get drafted or not, I don't know. He's not like, you know, some other international players that we've seen be projects who haven't played a lot of football. I mean, he played football at whatever level it was, but, I mean, he is a very, very intriguing athlete. Somebody's going to draft him. You know, maybe the Rams will, maybe they won't, I don't know. Someone will get this guy and try to turn him into an NFL receiver, because just his physical tools alone make him a draftable prospect. So, I mean, I could see the Rams taking a flyer on him. If they follow your mock draft and take Will Fuller and Braxton Miller, then no, I don't see them taking a flyer on Behringer.
They follow my mock draft, I want money.
Yeah, for sure. But outside of that, sure, you know, as a late-round flyer, these are the type of guys that you invest draft picks in to see if you can develop them and have them play a role on your roster.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I kind of disagree, just on the sense of, like, I don't know that these international guys command a lot of, let's get out there and draft him. And you know, you've stressed on this show time and time again just how important an NFL draft pick is, what the actual cost of an NFL draft pick is. And when you look at that and you say, okay, we've got a 6'4 guy, you know, maybe he runs the 4.4s, you know, he's got unbelievable talent. The athleticism is off the charts. But then you look and say, okay, but he's been playing for, you know, Borussia Dortmund's American football team or whatever the hell it is. And you look at that level of competition and say, okay, does this transcend? Does this work? And I think that when you look at maybe some of the other international guys, they've more been brought in, you know, hey, come try out with the team. We want to come take a look at you. And then with some of these guys that have serious skills, they do get in offered, you know, lucrative free agent contracts. But I don't know that outside of basketball, we've really seen a gravitation toward international players being drafted. I think that there's so much unknown with these European American football leagues that it's almost like American soccer players in reverse. Like, name me an American soccer player that's done super, super well in the Premier League. The list is like nil and not, because they don't. Like, it's just, you know, being an American and going over to the Premier League traditionally has not worked out the same way in achieving the level of stardom over there that maybe they would achieve over here in, like, the MLS. Or, you know, you look at a guy like Landon Donovan, you know, everybody knows who he is. He's the ground, you know, they worship the ground he walks on over here. But over there, nobody gave a damn. Like, he was just another American that didn't work out. And I think that there's some of that mindset with international players in football just because the sport is so new at a global level that people are hesitant to burn picks on guys like that. But I don't know. I haven't seen the film on this guy. Admittedly, I need to get out there and watch. I just hope I pronounced his name correctly. Last couple questions here. What are your thoughts on the preseason schedule, and do you believe the Cowboys was a given opponent to kick off the preseason? So I think what they're asking is, do you think that the NFL always intended to start with an L.A. versus Dallas, like a premier matchup in L.A.? And I'm just going to answer that one for you and say, yeah. Yeah, like, of course they did. It's a business. Mm-hmm. They were going to lead with their best foot when they returned to L.A. But what about the first part of that question? What do you think of the schedule outside of that?
I don't care.
That's basically the only answer. That's the answer.
Yep.
Don't care.
Yep. It's cool that they're open. They're, it's cool that they're opening with the Cowboys. Like we talked about earlier, it's going to be a spectacle. It's going to have a regular season atmosphere. But outside of that, it's all about what you do, you know, as a player, as a collective within your organization. Doesn't really matter who you do it against, whether you win or lose or what. I couldn't care less, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you can go 4-0 in the preseason, and it ain't going to matter. Nobody's – like, I have never, ever, ever heard a sports conversation that's began – well, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers went 2-14 this season, but I want to talk about their really successful preseason.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever said that, and nobody ever will. Kilcrea Kelly wants to know what Rams or what uniform will the Rams be wearing this year? And I think we already got the answer to that from the team, and that's they're not going to unveil anything new until 2019, right?
Yeah, it's kind of sad, too. You know, hopefully they'll bust the throwbacks out a few times playing at home. But
I imagine those color rush uniforms will...
Oh, I love them. I know people hate them. I love them. Absolutely.
I kind of do, too. I kind of do, too. I've got this weird love for them.
I would have loved to have worn something like that, for sure. I don't know what you would do with the Bears as far as the color rush, except you could get that nasty burnt orange.
Orange.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I'm talking about, man.
It would have been sweet. I'm a fan. I can't wait. I loved them last year, and I'm excited to see them again this year.
I think it's hilarious to me, just sticking with this conversation before we get to the last listener question, that when you see people explode on Twitter and say, oh, these uniforms are ugly, but then on that same token, the minute these teams go retro and bust out, like, so they hate the neon yellow uniforms, but the minute that, like, the Denver Broncos bust out their old blue and orange, like, the crappy color blue and orange.
Yeah,
people
the orange
lose
crack.
Their yeah, they lose their minds and they're like, those are the colors, man. San Diego busts out their baby blues and people are like, those are the colors. But then people stick with just one of those colors on their uniforms and people are like, they're ugly. But wait a minute. You liked them when they had the orange and blue in them. Why don't you just like the orange?
Yeah, I agree. People just like to make a fuss about something. I think they're great. The only ones I will say I thought were horrid were the Jacksonville mustard kind of muted color. Yeah, all the other ones I thought they were awesome.
You know the ones that I really enjoy, like the ones that I honestly enjoy the most, are like the crap brown ones, like the baby crap brown Denver Bronco ones that they wear that almost look like Wyoming colors.
Yeah.
I have this secret obsession with those uniforms. I don't know what it is, but they just remind me of a hot dog, and I love them.
That's pretty funny. Well, last year we had the, I think it was the Rams and the Buccaneers, right, the ketchup and mustard Thursday night color rush. So throw that on top of that hot dog, and you're good to go.
You just have them race around the side of the stadium, and then you just have, like, a third color rush just come in, and all of a sudden it's like the little president's race. at Nationals Park, and yeah, it's just great, man.
Yeah,
yeah, people hate it, but what they forget, man, is that this is for the players and this is for the younger fans, man. It's a way to draw them in. It's a way to make the game a little bit bigger. And at the end of the day, if it's growing the game, you shouldn't hate on it too much.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so the last question we have, and how much time you want to spend on this is up to you, but I promised Matt Drury, after I made a joke to him on Twitter, that we would discuss it. So damn it, Matt, we saved the best for last. Case Keenum, can the LA Rams win with him as a starting quarterback? Is it possible for them to win?
I think they can win, sure. Now, can they win the NFC West with Case Keenum? No. No, the NFC West is too good with Seattle and Arizona.
How many people said that about Russell Wilson? Can the Seahawks win the NFC West with a guy like Russell Wilson? How many people said that?
I probably said it when he was a rookie, sure. But he was, you know, he had no experience as an NFL quarterback. Nobody's questioning whether the Seahawks can win with Russell Wilson now because he's done it. And Case Keenum has been a quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he's not a rookie. He's not a guy with a ton of upside that hasn't, you know, been an active NFL quarterback. I think Case Keenum has shown us kind of who he is as a quarterback. And I don't think he can play at a high enough level, even if LA adds some weapons, even with the weapons they have now. He hasn't proven to me that he is a quarterback that can win games in this division, because you have to win games in this division. There are excellent defenses. Even the 49ers defense is still a legitimate defense, even though they've lost a bunch. They can still play at a high level. So you have to make plays. You have to have a quarterback that can make plays to win this division. You can win games within the division. You can win games. You can go 8-8, 9-7, which is kind of the conversation. You can't go 12-4 and win the NFC West with Case Keenum. He's not dynamic enough to get that done.
I think for me, the question is, how optimistic do you want the answer to be? Because can the Rams win the NFC West with Case Keenum? Sure. If Leicester can win the Premier League at 5,000-1. But 5,000-1, process that for a second. There is no American. I put this out there on Twitter, and the best that anybody could come up with for how crazy this Leicester story is for winning the Premier League is, and Cam, you'll appreciate this, the 2008 Fresno State Bulldogs baseball team. That's the best answer anybody could come up with about just how obscure a team Leicester had to be to go from basically being relegated this time last year to winning the Premier League this year. 5,000-1. If you're a gambling man, you know just how insane that is.
You're salivating.
Yeah,
someone who dropped $100 on that bet.
Dude, there was a guy that did, and it was crazy. He placed a $50 bet, I think it was. It was either a $50 or $100 bet on Leicester to win the Premier League at 5,000-1. And he actually cashed it out. I think it was a couple of weeks, maybe about a month ago, he called up the betting broker, because they're getting nervous too. Because they're looking at it, and right now, they're looking at it like, it's probably a good thing we settled out with him. But he called him up and said, look, man, I can't take the stress of this anymore. Like, the bet was starting to get national attention on ESPN, Fox Sports, everything, you name it. Guy bets on Leicester to win the Premier League as the most unlikely underdog, and they're going to do it. This guy was set to become one of the richest SOBs that you could imagine. And he couldn't take the stress, so he called up the betting company and said, hey, do you guys want to work out a deal? I imagine they looked at the likelihood of Leicester winning and said, you know, this is probably a much better option. So they reached an agreement with him, and he got paid out. But, you know, man, anything is possible, but I do not see it happening. I don't see the Rams stepping in with Case Keenum. I know Fisher is selling confidence on him, and maybe it does happen. Maybe Case Keenum comes across and he steps in and he gets, you know, next level Kurt Warner. Maybe it happens. But I think if you're a betting man, if you're setting yourself up for expectations, I almost think you have to look at the season and say there are going to be some growing pains. Case Keenum may win us some games, but he's probably going to frustratingly lose us some games. And if you take that mindset out of the gate, then I think you may be surprised by what happens. You at least set yourself up for tempered disappointment, and then if Case Keenum surpasses expectations, it's a pleasant surprise for everyone, including us. But Matt, to answer your question as seriously and as dignified as I think we possibly can, with Case Keenum. And I just don't think it's likely. But it's possible, because Leicester are probably going to win the Premier League at 5,000-1. So I'm not going to say I'm not going to say no.
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
All right, Cam's going to say no. Sorry, Matt. All right, well, obviously, Cam and I will both be out this Sunday down in Valencia at the Best of the West Finals. As we're wrapping up, do you want to talk a little bit about that before we get up out of here, man?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be probably the best single event that we've ever done. We've had big events. We had 62 teams down in Fontana a couple weeks ago. We had 40 teams yesterday. We're only going to have 18 teams at the Best of the West, but it is 18 teams that have qualified from our four regionals. So, I mean, if you're a fan of the Pac-12, Fresno State, it doesn't really matter. The guys who will be making plays for your university will be down there in Orange County on the 24th. And, I mean, it's extremely fun to watch these kids. You know, I mean, Sua Craven is one of the best defensive players I've ever seen at passing down, you know, a few years ago. Now he's a draftable guy. So, I mean, there are countless number of players we've had that are moving on.
Went to the Green Bay Packers in our NFL scout, NFL mock round, second round of our NFL mock draft.
God, I think that would be great. Dom Capers would get a lot of use out of his skill set. But these are guys that you see, and they're young, and they're just out there competing. It's an awesome event. And like I said, if you're down in L.A., you're a Trojan or a Bruin fan, or you're a San Diego State fan, come out and check these guys out, because I promise you, you will see guys who will be making plays for you for years to come.
You know what I'm most excited about, man, is that one of my favorite things to do when I'm watching soccer is I like to watch some of just the teams like Arsenal, like Barca, like Bayern Munich, who move the ball around the pitch with incredibly efficient ease, making it – there's a reason that soccer is called the beautiful game. And when you watch teams like that move the ball around almost effortlessly, pinging it back and forth across the pitch at will, when you see these amazing 7-on-7 teams zipping up and down the field and the talent that's out there, honestly, 7-on-7 football is one of the most entertaining ways you can spend your time. It eliminates all the boring stuff about football, which we'll be the first to admit there's a lot of boring stuff. And it's just basically high octane, high energy, nothing but some of the finest catches, runs, stops, interceptions, just throws that you've ever seen. And these are kids that are going to be playing on Sundays. You know, it might not matter now, but you know what? In 5 years, you're going to care. And you're going to care a lot. And so if you're down in that area and you want to get out, man, I cannot recommend it enough. The work that the passing down guys do with kids, with parents, you know, just even staying in touch with alumni and helping get their names out there is absolutely second to none. If you get the opportunity, you know, I know we're at the Best of the West regional finals now, but, you know, moving forward, if you're interested, please get in contact with myself, get in contact with Cam. We can point you in the right direction and help get you out there. But again, you know, this is going to be some exciting football next Sunday, and I'm really excited to head down there and watch that ball fly around the field with you, man.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. Yeah, I appreciate the words, and Scout has always been one of our biggest supporters, so it's going to be fun. Like I said, and like you just reiterated, if you're down there, you want to watch some good football, it's free. We had some guys come up yesterday asking me how much tickets were, and I was like, oh, it's $60. He's like, $60? $60 a person? I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, we want to watch the event. And I was like, man, we don't charge people to come watch the event. Come watch the event. You sit and watch the event. I mean, we're not going to charge people to watch it. So it's free. It's fun. Kids love watching it. Like you said, it's just exciting. There are skill guys making skill plays, and it's going to be a fun day on the 24th.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And it, like I said, if you're down there, you want to say hi to us, you even want to just talk Rams football, please come up. Please say hi. We will be out there. Other than that, man, final thoughts. We've gone long. There's a lot of stuff. The draft is coming up. There is a draft party for the Rams. What we want to know is, what do you guys want? What do you guys want to know? Do you guys want to see what kind of draft coverage would you like to see out of us? Let us know, and we would be more than happy to facilitate in that. And I've also got one last announcement to make here. I reached an agreement with Bill Ryder of CBS Sports, who hosts his own show from 12 to 3, Monday through Fridays, on the AM there in Los Angeles. He's going to start coming on as a correspondent for us, talking college – or not college football, talking Rams football – talking the NFL, the NFL draft, you name it. We're kind of excited to get some media partnerships rolling. And I got some other things that I'm also working on in the background that could prove to be pretty damn cool. So we'll keep you informed in that. Cam, why don't you tell them where to find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Cam Worrell. That's pretty much the best place to find me. I got Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, but I don't really do much on them. It's mostly Twitter at Cam Worrell is the best place to interact with me. I try to get to any questions, you know, listeners have. Obviously, that some of the, for the podcast, kind of saving for this. But, yeah, if people have some Rams questions, just hit me up at Cam Worrell on Twitter. I'll be more than happy to have some conversations with you guys out there.
And we can still be found with an underscore at LA underscore Rams report one of these days. I keep talking about it and don't do anything about it. But you can also find me on Twitter at Fight On Twist. If you would like to give our publisher a follow at Inside Troy, Ryan Abraham, one of the best in the business. He has the Ramble On podcast with Steve Mason. Other than that, we will be back next Monday answering your questions, previewing the draft, all the way up until the damn draft. So keep sending in those questions, even if they're the same. We'll keep answering them because you know what? Everything changes. It always does. It always will. And we look forward to it. We want to know what we can do to help you guys. So please get in contact with us. If next time, we will catch you guys here on the LA Rams Report on Flipping Tables. I am Josh Webb. He is Cam Worrell. And we will catch you guys next.